You're listening to Jason Greger Show podcast brought to you by Lakewood Chev. 20% off MSRP cash credit on select vehicles, over 4,500 on the Sonic, over 12,500 on the Tahoe. You won't believe what you can say. Stop in, check it out right now at Lakewood Chev. Early edition of Inside the Stripes with Bud Steen, 30 years as a CFL official, and man, he was always old, but now he's officially old because they can call you Grandpa. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You became a grandfather for the first time yesterday.
Very exciting. Yesterday morning at 7:30. That's right. There's a new Steen on the block.
Son, daughter, what?
Grandson, Win.
Win?
Yeah.
It's opposite of Steen, I'll tell you that right now.
Nice talk, friend. Nice talk. Oh,
that's good. That's great. Mom's good. Dad's all right.
Yeah. Everything's going great. Okay. I can hardly wait to play with a little guy.
Oh, nice. Nice. Well, hopefully they have you over, change diapers soon. It's the best part of it.
You bet.
Now, we have I want to get to this email. We got an email question, which I always appreciate from listeners who asked about it. Hey, guys, how could the Eskimos lose yards on a play, no major penalty, when the Tiger Cats went offside before the play?
Interesting question. What we have on this play are what are called dual fouls. There is a penalty against one team and a penalty against the other team. In the case of dual fouls, the first non-offending team has the option of accepting or declining the first penalty. And in the case in question, Hamilton was offside and Edmonton completed a pass for a considerable gain. Unfortunately,
Duke Williams
had stepped on the boundary and then he moved back into the field of play and caught the pass. So he was ineligible to catch that pass, and he was penalized correctly for illegal participation. So you go to the Edmonton captain, do you want the Hamilton offside? Remembering, of course, Edmonton captain, if you decline that, they're, of course, going to accept the penalty against you, which will be applied here, and you'll be back 10. So let's just saw it off, 5 yards here against you, repeat the down.
Okay.
Okay, so now,
when the official goes over, and I don't know who's is Mike Riley, the Eskimo captain on offense. I think it is. So he goes over to Mike Riley and explains, okay, so you got a 10-yard infraction. They have a 5. If you want to accept their penalty, then they're obviously accepting yours, and it's 5.
Yeah,
right.
Basically, you do everything for them. You tell them what's going on because it is.
Yeah, the players don't know all the rules.
Well,
right?
And not only that, but it's so logical. Another example, late Friday night, for those that were still awake on the BC game, on the last play of the game, Winnipeg kicks the field goal and it comes short. The returner, I think it was Rainey that caught the ball, starts running around and potentially could have scored on the play, but there was a holding against British Columbia on the play. Now, in that case, one would suppose that Winnipeg might consider applying that penalty and giving BC the ball at wherever it was going to be put. And, I don't know, cross your fingers and hope that BC drops the ball and then they can run it into the end zone and win the game magically or something. On that particular play, it's pretty certain what's going to go on. And in fact, the referee went to Mike O'Shea very quickly. And, O'Shea's response was, unless it's unnecessary roughness, we're declining it. The game's over. You can do an awful lot of the, let's say, predetermination for the teams and the coaches just to keep things moving.
Well, in that game, we saw Medlock line up for a 49-yard field goal attempt. And they had Miller out to the far right, lined up behind him.
Yep.
And he purposely didn't kick the field goal. He just almost punted the ball off the tee down the right side.
Yep.
Miller runs up, recovers it. First down, Winnipeg.
Brilliant, brilliant play. Mike O'Shea is a genius of special teams trickery. We've seen it ever since he started coaching. When he was with, when Jim Barker was the head coach in Toronto, one game in Saskatchewan, I, I flippantly said to Jim, you know, that guy makes you look awfully good, because they were winning ball games because of O'Shea's genius on these things. And that's a great play. They had Miller split way out. He hadn't substituted on the play, so that there really wasn't any concern about whether there was any kind of rule violation or anything like that. He didn't come on late. He was onside, and BC just didn't cover him. They just fell asleep on it. I imagine that every special teams coach this week is showing that play and drilling it into their players to look around the field to make sure where everybody is.
Now, Miller, does he just has to be behind the line of scrimmage, or does he have to be behind where the ball is being? So 7 yards back, he has to be behind the kicker.
He has to be behind the ball when it's kicked. Another interesting point on that play was that Winnipeg only had 11 players on the field. So they got away with all of that with one less guy on the field than BC had.
You can play with fewer guys,
sure.
Obviously.
Yeah.
There's never a situation where you get penalized for that?
Nope.
Now, is that just they screwed it up, but could Winnipeg then... could they have brought on the 12th guy at any point, or once the ball is snapped, they have to finish the play with 11?
They can bring the 12th man on as long as he comes on prior to the snap of the ball, and he must enter the tackle box. So he has to get up between the tackles so he is visible to the whole world, and then go to the position that he intends on playing.
So what if he is running in from the sidelines, and then they snap the ball, and he doesn't get in between the tackles before, even though he's a 12th guy?
Right.
Is it a legal substitution?
Yes.
Oh. That happened frequently?
No.
Okay. Yeah, why does he have to go in between the tackles? Just because he should be in the huddle? Is that what the instance? That's what they're suggesting?
One would assume yes.
Or so the guy doesn't hide just foot on the sidelines.
That's correct. We don't want sleepers. And there was a lot of confusion associated with the description of the play and talking about sleepers and stuff. And none of that applied. The broadcasters were just slightly confused on that particular play.
Bud Steen joins us inside the Stripes. Text messages always welcome at 10, 12, 60. Now, second time this season, and this time it's an Edmonton Eskimos, Peters a one-game suspension for contacting officials. Happened twice now in the first 5 weeks of the season. It's not a good trend. What is there anything being said from the officials association to the league?
It's actually being said from the league to its participants. There was a directive that was published on Sunday, distributed to all of the team presidents, general managers, and coaches, as well as the CFLPA. Essentially codifying a whole bunch of documents. One of the commissioner's jobs and one of the tasks that he has committed to complete quickly is to create a policy for dealing with abusive officials. But what was done on the weekend was they put all of the information that we have already published and in place from our policies, our bylaws, the code of conduct that was drafted and approved a few years ago, and rule book and memos, etc., and it made it very, very clear that avoidable physical contact with game officials, which includes pushing, shoving, running into, bumping, tripping, striking, grabbing their person or their uniforms or any other intimidating or interfering conduct is completely and totally unacceptable. And it goes on to talk about verbal and other non-physical abuse, profanity, comments, etc. The league is committed to take steps. If a player or a coach or other club personnel is involved in any of the things that I've been referring to, the league has committed to respond very quickly with appropriate discipline. And in this case, if you've watched the play, the degree of physical contact between Peters and the back judge was what we in the legal profession might describe as de minimis. Really not very much.
Yeah, well, compared to like Will Hill grabs a guy by the scruff and gets the exact same suspension.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, exactly. I still didn't like the Will Hill suspension.
No, and here, so Commissioner Ambrosi is making it pretty clear that he's in control of where that bar is, so to speak, and it's coming down, and he is not going to put up with any contact. And the players have to just rein things in. And, you know, from Peter's perspective, I can understand that he was flying pretty high at that particular instant in the football game. There was a physical altercation, I'll call it, between he and 89 Saunders. Looked like Saunders may have mowed him down on the play. And they get up kind of going at each other, and the field judge and the back judge intercede and get in between them. And I'm sure there were lots of words being rifled back and forth at between the players. And when your adrenaline's that flushing through your body, you do stuff. You do silly stuff. And in this case, Peter's just two-handed the back judge slightly and ended up getting a penalty for it. An objectionable conduct flag was thrown at the time, and quite honestly, he could have been ejected from the game at that instant, but the official in question just felt that, listen, the penalty itself turned out to be a 3-yard penalty because of where they were on the field, what was sufficient to settle things down at that time. Anyway, the league is clearly standing up now and saying, players, beware, keep your hands off the guys, leave us alone and let us do our job.
Hey guys, any abuse of officials uncalled for, but on that note, CFL officials should be published for blatant abuse of the CFL rule book. What? That's a moronic point. Well, I'll be bluntly about it, because if you're suggesting that the referees and officials can never make a mistake, then don't watch sports. Because guess what? The players know all the rules. They still make mistakes. They know all the plays. No one should expect perfection. When there's a glaring error, the officials are dealt with. Now, they don't talk to the media, so people don't have a coach saying, wow, that was a bad play. Right. But we all know they're evaluated, and ultimately they end up not getting playoff assignments.
Worse than that.
They get cut during the year.
That's right. We send guys down halfway through the season for various reasons, and the guys are absolutely accountable.
Now, is the first cut at 9 games or 6?
There's no set point. We have now ended the relationship, but there are no more assignments for the Americans that were up here. So we've got that in the mix. Our prospects will probably see another 2 or 3 weeks.
Now, what if a prospect has been great and has been ranked and evaluated high? Does he stick automatically?
You bet. Couple of our first year guys last year hung around right to the end. They did such a good job that they were performing at the same level as our veterans.
Okay, so it's not. It's not like if you're a rookie, you're automatically going back down to CIS when CIS starts.
No, sir. No. It's all based on the evaluations and how they're interacting and how the crews feel about them. How are they fitting in? How are they reacting to situations? Because as the season progresses, every game is a little bit tougher than the last one you did. There's going to be a little bit more intensity. The players are playing harder. They're hitting harder. There's a lot more discussion going on around the play. The coaches are a little bit more uptight. Jobs are on the line on that side of the boundary, so to speak. And it gets tougher and tougher every single week.
The percentage of penalties is still down this year compared to last year.
Yes.
Has it leveled off, or are we still seeing a decrease?
No, we're at 15.9 right now. So based on the entirety of last year, we've gone from 17.8 to 15.9. So we're down a couple of penalties a game, which is good. Our average game time has dropped a bit, which is also good. And there's lots of action. Comment was made in the game last night that I completely agree with. I can't remember a more exciting start to a CFL season. The games have virtually all been competitive, save maybe two. They've come right down to the end. 15 of the 21 games played so far this year have been decided in the last 3 minutes. And, you know, what more do you want? You're sticking there right to the end, seeing what happens. You know, last night, field goal, last play of the game. You know, great, great game to watch. Very entertaining.
Now, I know Randy Ambrosi came out as a commissioner and said his hands are kind of tied with how the certain rules are written. In the offseason, does it need to be changed where if you touch an official, it should be an automatic 6-game suspension? Make it harsh enough so players won't even contemplate doing it. Because I'm sorry, one game, I don't think even that's severe enough.
I would suspect that the league would be appreciative of input from the media and from fans. The league office encourages the fans of the league to communicate with them. Surprisingly enough, senior vice president and others in the league office actually read the stuff that comes in, and they get to know some of the people that are writing them regularly. There's not many leagues, I would suggest, that communicate in that fashion with the fans. So if you have an opinion, if you feel strongly about it, I would strongly suggest that you send an email. You can communicate through the CFL website. Send your opinion, and it will be brought to the commissioner's attention, and I'm sure he will consider that along with all of the other opinions of the various participants. I am hopeful that a new policy will be approved before we start the 2018 season, and it will have some gradient of discipline for physical contact.
Now, on the other side, and we've seen it in sports at times where an official crosses the line himself, being in control of the game, whether it's, you know, ripping down a player or not. How is that, as an evaluator, graded out? Is that -2? Is it separate? What happened? Because it can't be a double. Well, you know what? You can't touch the official, but the official can say whatever they want, whenever they want. I'm not saying it's an issue, but right. I'm assuming in 30 years, you've seen instances of it. What happens when it's the official that's crossing the line?
Well, in such a situation, I would suspect that the director of officiating, who is the boss of the officials, would probably set that particular official down. If an official loses his stuff during a game, how can he remain clear-headed and objective to observe and evaluate what's going on in front of him? He can't. And we can't have guys out there that are spinning around inside their heads. So it would be dealt with, and I would suspect that an official that did that would, we may not call it a suspension, but he may lose an assignment or two. I've never seen it happen. I have seen some officials react, myself included. But we quickly take a deep breath, take a step back, and get on to the next play.
Bud, we'll talk to you next week. And a great game Friday night in Edmonton as the undefeated Eskimos take on the second-place BC Lions for the second time this season. 4-1 Lions. Their offense is shredding defenses right now. And the Eskimos, all they do is win.
You know, I encourage people to go out. It is going to be a beautiful night, and it will be a fabulous football game, probably the best game of the weekend. So get out there and support your ball club.